This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I am Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. Debbie Evans is back with me today. Debbie is a retired state registered nurse for the UK's NHS. She also worked for quite some time as an advisor to the UK's Department of Health, and she is currently the nursing correspondent for UK Column News. It's always a pleasure to speak with her, and I'm sure today will be no different. Debbie, welcome back. How are you?
Jesse, thank you so much. Always lovely to be back with you and on TNT. I'm a bit, well, speechless, breathless with all that's going on, whether it be cost of living or Ukraine or the United Nations or earthquakes, tornadoes. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It seems like wherever you look, there's some kind of emergency or something that you haven't seen before in your lifetime. It's quite extraordinary. Where do we start?
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I struggle to figure out whether it seems that way because we've been amped up over the past 2.5 years by a so-called state of emergency and a propaganda blitz that continues to increase, or if our senses are just heightened, so everywhere we look, we see something, or a combination of both. I don't know. I'm leaning toward a combination of both, but whatever the case, my radar is blipping like crazy.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think it's a combination too, but I think it's people joining dots and it's a raising of consciousness because as we're going along, I think once you see, you can't unsee. Once you hear, you can't unhear. So once you start to question one thing and then you find that they're an anomaly or that there's a lie being told or that there's deceit and duplicity going on, then I think you start to consciously look at everything and question everything. And I think as time is going on, that's what more and more people seem to be doing. And of course, it's different things that are triggering different people. So for some people, the vaccine gene technology known as mRNA is something that may trigger some. And then the others, it could be the cost of living. Then the others, it's something completely different. So I think there are so many stages of people coming to the realization that the world is virtually imploding in front of their faces. But I do think more and more people are listening to alternative media like TNT, watching UK Column, keeping an eye on all of the other broadcasters, and people are listening. So it's quite reassuring to know that so many more people are starting to join the dots and see what we've seen and see what we continue to see, because I'm continuing to learn every single day. There's so much to learn. It's a case of, oh my goodness, you know, almost it's overwhelming, but it's out there. And I think for people with inquisitive minds like us, Jesse, you know, it's out there for us to see in plain sight.
Yes, I absolutely agree with everything you just said there. And as maddening as it can be, as you said, once you see it, you can't unsee it. So for me to turn it off would be willful ignorance, and I'm not going to partake in that ever. So as I said, it's maddening at times, more often than not, exasperating, exhausting, but it could be a lot worse. I'm certainly not complaining. And I think that any of us who cares about humanity needs to be constantly or as often as we can, connecting the dots and trying to make sense of what's going on in the world, what harm is trying to be done to us, where that's coming from, and how we can resist it. Because I believe that we are at a point in human history where the future of humanity is very much at stake. And I realize that throughout human history, people have constantly thought that, and sometimes they were right, sometimes they were off the mark and hyperbolizing, but I don't think much is hyperbole these days when it comes to talking about the future of humanity being at stake. I think we really are at a dire point, and resistance in whatever form it takes, in whatever we choose to focus on, is imperative. And it's not just one thing. We can't look for just one thing as the problem or the center of power, because there are many things happening. But as you said, with regard to connecting the dots, I believe they are connected more than they aren't. So with that said, let's start in the UK with the excess mortality data that recently came out from the Office for National Statistics, the ONS. I found two points very disturbing, to say the least. One is that when for 2020 through 2021, I believe, when all of the COVID deaths were removed, there was still a substantial amount of excess death and a record amount for six consecutive months for July through December of 2021. And in addition to that, most of the elderly excess death, non-COVID excess death, occurred in care homes and totaled a bit over 80,000 excess deaths in care homes. So we can get into more specifics with regard to that, but in summary, I'll say what this points to is what you and I have been saying for quite some time, a culling, especially of the elderly.
100%. And, you know, Mike Robinson did a great piece on UK Column yesterday's news about this very fact about the excess mortality. And, you know, this is a huge number, 80,000. It is a monumental number. And as we've been talking many times before, and you've got your own in the USA, you've seen a deliberate, or what appears to be a deliberate, culling of elderly and vulnerable people with things like remdesivir. In the UK, we've been using midazolam and morphine, I believe. In the USA, you use midazolam for the lethal injection for prisoners that are on death row. And these are two really dangerous drugs, especially when combined for people that have got respiratory illnesses. So if somebody has got a bit of a chest infection, or, you know, if they're elderly or they're immunosuppressed, giving them midazolam and morphine is certainly not going to help them. It's certainly going to make them either very sick or kill them. And we're seeing this used over and over again. And this secrecy behind it all, you know, all of these elderly people in our care homes have been neglected. They've been avoided. They've been covered up. Nobody wants to talk about these 80,000 excess deaths. Well, we do, because they're extremely relevant. And I believe here in the NHS, on July the 1st, it was announced that we had 100 days to empty hospitals because, of course, we're expecting the twindemic, the COVID and the flu, next round in autumn, which is why the bivalents are being thrown out at the moment to elderly people as well. But you know, how is that data going to show on the MHRA data? Are we going to see that any of these elderly who are being given the bivalent vaccine now and that might die as a result of that, is that going to go up on the MHRA data, or is this going to be death cause unknown? Because we seem to have a lot of deaths cause unknown, like we do sudden adult death syndrome. So, you know, the fact that these 80,000 deaths, no one's talking about these on the mainstream media. Nobody wants to actually address the fact that 80,000 of our elderly in the UK have died. For how? You know, this is excess mortality. This is on top of what we would normally be expecting. So this is extremely worrying and something really that everybody should be asking questions, especially with, you know, the BBC and Sky and all the mainstream media outlets. They should be focusing on this, but of course they're not. And it's left to us, Jesse, to raise this alarm bell and to say that this is actually happening.
Yes. So I have two graphics right in front of me from yesterday's UK column news. The first one with regard to the elderly. So this is, again, from the Office for National Statistics. Excess deaths in England and Wales, March 2020 to June 2022. The place of occurrence with the highest number of excess deaths due to causes other than COVID-19 was private homes with 89,253 excess deaths, a 30.2% increase. And in addition to that, go ahead.
Sorry, Jesse. I was just going to say, you know, these people, we've had waiting lists. People haven't been seen by doctors. So people that had been diagnosed with an illness at the beginning of the pandemic, or people that had ongoing illnesses, they simply haven't been seen. They've simply been completely ignored, no matter how serious their illness, you know, whether it be cancer or whether they've got another serious illness, they have literally not been seen by a doctor, or they've not had an appointment with the NHS or any consultants. And these people have literally been fading away at home. We thought that this would happen along with the care homes, but to see it in black and white private homes, you know, these are residential homes, your home, my home, you know, this is absolutely unbelievable, really unbelievable.
Right. And as we just discussed, and as we've discussed many times before, this is also the case in care homes as well as residential homes. And the 30.2% increase, I believe, is compared to the baseline of 2019. So a 30.2% increase in this bracket of excess deaths compared to 2019. In addition to that, with regard to excess deaths in England and Wales from March 2020 to June 2022, when deaths due to COVID-19 were removed from the total, the number of deaths remained above the five-year average in 12 of the 28 months. Six of these were consecutive, July 2021 to December 2021. Now, the July 2021 to December 2021 jumps out at me because that suggests what we're seeing with regard to excess mortality is the result of the injection drives, because the injections were rolled out in mass in January of 2021. And as we know, it takes some time for the deaths from these injections to accrue to a point where we can see a large signal like this. So I suspect that that's what we're looking at as at least a very large contributor to this this excess death being above the five-year average in 12 of the 28 months, excess death not due to COVID-19. And it's staggering to see. And as you said, nobody's talking about this. You'll have noticed that it's now permissible to talk about how lockdowns were the wrong response and the damage they've caused, but nobody will go near the injections. Nobody in corporate media, even corporate media that tends to question what's going on a bit more. So for example, GBN in the UK or Fox News here in the US, the injections are verboten still.
Yeah, they are. And you know, what's even more scary is that you bear in mind that those are the Office for National Statistics data. If you I don't know how you can transfer the numbers, but we know that the yellow card scheme for the serious adverse reactions with the MHRA are only about 10% reported. So hugely, hugely underreported. Can you imagine what would have happened to that MHRA data, that yellow card data on deaths, if all of those people, those excess mortality deaths, and some of them obviously serious adverse reactions and deaths from the injection were reported? You know, we would see much, much larger statistics, which we've been expecting. But of course, as we know, that they're underreported, both on the VAERS scheme in the US and with the yellow card scheme here in the UK. So these deaths have gone completely unnoticed, like they didn't happen. It's like, let's not talk about them.
Right. And still we're seeing people collapse or drop dead right in front of us. We saw one of the guards, at least one of the guards, participating in the ceremonial activities following the Queen's death, collapse. And then of the thousands upon thousands, maybe more, I don't know what the total was, people who waited in line to pay their respects to the Queen, over a matter of 2 days, there were over 400 people in that line who collapsed. And mind you, it was not hot out, it was chilly out. And a number of these people had to be taken to hospital. So you can see when big groups like that come together, people collapse in large numbers. Now, whether that's due to the injections or other health problems, we can't say for sure, but we need to at least ask those questions and investigate whether or not the injections are responsible, or delayed treatments because of the insane COVID measures are responsible. But none of these questions are getting asked. People in their hundreds collapse, 290 people in one day, and it's
ridiculous.
Media,
it's
least,
happening.
Yeah.
It's happening at football stadiums as well. We're not being told that, you know, multiple people are collapsing at football stadiums. And of course, we cannot eliminate the injection. You know, they cannot eliminate it. They cannot tell us 100% that it was not the injection that caused the death. And what I feel is so sad, and I'm guilty of it, as I'm sure many people listening will be too. But as soon as you hear that someone's collapsed, or as soon as you hear that someone's sick or that someone's died, the first question that pops into your head now is, did they have the injection? And you know, it's awful having to think that, because the first thing that you should be doing is, oh my goodness, that's tragic, I'm so sorry. But the minute you hear something, that is the first thought. You can't stop the first thought coming into your head. And for me, it's always, oh my goodness, that's awful, but what caused it? Was it the injection? And until they eliminate it, we have to assume that some of these people, I'm not saying all of them, but some of them will have been directly affected by the injection. And unless we do postmortems, unless we have an investigation, we'll never know. But what we should be doing in the meantime is stopping it, stopping the rollout immediately, like yesterday. No more experimental novel medications. And I'm not just talking about the vaccine or the gene technology, as I call it. I'm talking about remdesivir, molnupiravir, Paxlovid, all of these novel experimental substances that are coming down the line should be stopped. I did a very interesting interview with Hedley Reese, who has 30 years in the manufacturing and distribution lines for pharmaceuticals. And, you know, every single point, this has not touched anywhere near a safety inspection. All down the manufacturing line, normally, for something like paracetamol or aspirin or ibuprofen, it would take 11 years to get to market. 11 years. And yet we are getting these substances to market in 100 days. They need to be stopped immediately because we cannot definitively say that these people, these 400 people that collapsed, did not have a serious adverse reaction. And similarly, you know, in the UK, it's actually my stepfather is a retired lieutenant colonel. He was in the household division and was with the Grenadier Guards, and the uniforms are extremely heavy and they're extremely hot. So seeing soldiers collapsing like that isn't sadly unusual, because many of them do if they get very hot or if they've been standing for a long time in one position. But again, the first thing that goes to your head is, was that person vaccinated? Was it anything to do with the vaccine? Similarly, a news reporter that was interviewing Liz Truss during her hustings when she was sort of campaigning to become prime minister collapsed in front of her. And the first question you ask is, did they have the injection? And how sad that we have reached times like that when we're, maybe it's just me, but I suspect that it isn't, and that many other people are asking the same question in their heads.
I absolutely ask that question first whenever I hear of somebody collapsing or dying suddenly, in quotes. And it's not because we are being hyperbolic or jumping the gun. It's because we know how toxic these injections are and what they are capable of doing to people based on mountains of empirical evidence. And we can see signals that do not make any sense, but signals that only started appearing after these injections were rolled out. For example, now there are reports day after day about 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds, 15-year-olds collapsing on sports fields and dying. Yes, that's happened before in the past, but not in these numbers and not with this frequency. Something is clearly going on. And when it comes to kids, when it comes to adolescents, we're rarely dealing with comorbidities or underlying health problems. And if they've received this injection, I think you have to go right to that as the first cause to investigate. That only makes sense. Yeah. But to ignore that is...
Sorry, Jesse, you carry on. No,
that's okay.
You carry on. I was just going to say, you know, that we're living in 2022. We should not be hearing about 10, 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds collapsing of myocarditis and then going into a state of cardiac arrest, some of them needing heart transplants, some of them not making it and dying. We should not be hearing about this en masse. It's just, we've never heard about this before. It's the same as in the UK. We've never heard the statistic 1 in 2 die of cancer. All of these things now, we're being thought, oh, let's normalize them. Children get myocarditis. No, they don't. And the myocarditis that children get after having received the vaccine in inverted commas, gene technology, is completely different from the myocarditis if it's not vaccine induced. It's much more serious. And, you know, again, yesterday on UK Column News, we showed a shocking 2-minute YouTube from, I think it was New York Presbyterian Hospital, which was a cartoon animation of a child saying they didn't feel very well, but all of a sudden they were taken to hospital and the doctors made them better and it was myocarditis and now they could fulfill their ambitions. Actually, I was just shocked to see that, number one, we were normalizing this. Number two, it was incorrect information because sadly, many of those children that do have myocarditis and ongoing further complications as a result can die. So it's not always a happy ending. So for the New York Presbyterian Hospital to have put out this YouTube, I found quite shocking. I don't know what you thought of it, Jesse, because I'm guessing you saw it on the news.
Yes, I did. I've seen it multiple times on multiple programs, and it's, no pun intended, it's breathtaking in the worst way. Clearly an attempt to normalize something that is hideously abnormal. What I also noticed is that there's a blend in that commercial between real life footage, so a real little girl, and then cartoon sort of footage, animated footage, like one would expect to see in the metaverse. So there's a blending of that. And then at one point, the young girl who's narrating the commercial says that the doctors fixed my heart with a machine, which to me, whether intentional or not, is seeding this idea that machines are going to be the healthcare providers and the offer the treatments of the future. So there are layers of hideousness to that commercial in my perception. But overall,
I think those are brilliant observations, Jesse. Brilliant observations, because everything that you've just said is actually spot on. You know, we are looking at the merge of machines and health. We are looking at a virtual health system, augmented health system, and using the cartoons and the blend. I haven't actually noticed it, but I think, yeah, that's an absolutely excellent observation. I think everybody should just go and watch the 2-minute YouTube and make up their own mind about it. But really great observations there. I haven't noticed.
Yes, it's frightening what you can pick up in these little bits with multiple viewings. And perhaps I'm seeing something that's not there, or maybe subconsciously on the part of the producers, that's the way it turned out. But I suspect there's something at play there. There's some sort of seeding of a mentality we're to take that goes beyond accepting child myocarditis as a normal occurrence. With everything we know about the push for transhumanism, about the push to herd us into the metaverse, I can't help but see those overlaps. And we were talking about connecting the dots, and I think that's a way we have to connect the dots. And we can't say for sure, but it's important that we pick up on those signs. And we have to remember, too, that the people and entities who produce such pieces of propaganda are experts at manipulating our psyches, both consciously and subconsciously. So I think I'm willing to wager everything that we see in that commercial was done with meticulous intent to create both conscious and subconscious reactions in viewers. That's how propaganda works. And we have to realize that and understand there's more to what we're seeing than what is presented on the surface, which is bad enough in and of itself. We need to take a quick break, but when we come back, there's much more I'd like to get into with you. So everybody, please hang tight, and I'll be back with Debbie Evans here on TNT Radio after this.
TNT Radio's Mike Ryan.
The top official at the U.S. Justice Department was a law partner with Hunter Biden's attorney, Chris Clark, raising serious concerns about potential conflicts of interest as the years-long federal probe in the president's son has reportedly reached a critical stage. Clark, a partner at New York-based firm Latham & Watkins, worked with Nicholas McQuaid on at least four different cases, which he was also a partner at the practice, according to court records. The cases were high-stakes commercial litigation where the pair regularly defended clients facing multi-million dollar lawsuits. McQuaid was named acting head of the Justice Department's Criminal Division on January 20, 2021. That's the day President Biden was inaugurated. Clark started representing Hunter Biden a month before. Hunter Biden has been under investigation by the Department of Justice since 2018, and a probe initially centered around taxes that's reportedly expanded into potential money laundering and violations of foreign lobbying laws. McQuaid's involvement brings up questions about the ethics of the Hunter Biden probe.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
When a crisis hits, close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. Rescuing. Honoring. Protecting. Caring. Inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes, across all missions, has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
What? Are you kidding me?
If you can't believe what you're hearing, then get the straight talk from us. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. I am Jesse Zerwell, and I am speaking with Debbie Evans, nursing correspondent for UK Column News. So, Debbie, we were discussing so much of the madness, or at least the latest madness, with regard to specifically COVID-19, the injections, what they are doing to people. And the evidence is mounting by the day, by the minute, I would venture to say. And yet we get headlines like this from RTHK.HK, which is a Chinese media outlet based in Hong Kong. A piece headlined, "Baby BioNTech shots, quote, may be available next month," unquote. And I want to read through this full piece. It's quite short, but it's shocking in what it reveals in just seven brief paragraphs. A governmental pandemic advisor, Lau Yulong, said on Wednesday that the baby version of the BioNTech coronavirus jab could be available in Hong Kong as early as next month. This comes after the government said it had received an application from the vaccine manufacturer to supply the shots to Hong Kong. The lower dosage, if approved, would be for children aged between 6 months and 5 years old. Lau, who's also chair pediatrics professor at the University of Hong Kong, said it shouldn't take too long for the authorities to complete their vetting of the jabs. Quote, "Obviously, the bottleneck is when the pharmaceutical company will be able to send those vaccines to Hong Kong. I suppose as soon as it's in Hong Kong, it will be put into use immediately, unquote, Lau told RTHK. Last month, the government approved the use of Sinovac jabs for children as young as 6 months. Lau said the arrival of the BioNTech shots should help boost the vaccination rate among the under threes, which is currently at around 15%. He said this level is not satisfactory, adding that vaccination is the best way to protect young children from serious illness brought on by COVID infections. And this was published yesterday. So despite all that is known around the world about the toxicity and the lethality of these injections, here we have China pushing out the Pfizer version after the Sinovac version to infants and toddlers, just as we've seen done in the US. Again, lockstep comes to mind and democide comes to mind. I'd like to get your response to this.
Oh, I mean, I could just cry. I mean, I could just cry because, I mean, recently we fought and fought and fought to object to 5 to 11-year-olds getting the injection and succeeded. So now they don't need to have it routinely, thank goodness, and we're not setting up vaccination centres in schools, but we're still promoting these jabs on pregnant women. I mean, big time, we're promoting them on pregnant women. And we're also saying to pregnant women that if they take the injection, it will protect their newborn baby for up to 6 months. So now we're talking about giving these injections to babies. And, you know, I noticed that you said the Sinovac one. What's interesting about Hong Kong is that actually, I think it was last year, Hong Kong was saying that their birth rate was going from bad to worse. Because women didn't want to have babies because they were worried about what future they were going to bring their children into. And as we know, Hong Kong is very overcrowded, but is also, interestingly, geographically, you know, it's one of the most overcrowded, if not the most overcrowded place on the planet, and is relies on China completely for water. Completely. Mm-hmm. And Hong Kong's been in the, you know, we were having all those huge protests in Hong Kong as well, which have all gone quiet because China are sort of marching in and have marched in to Hong Kong. So clearly we can see the Chinese fist going down because the Chinese have got a zero tolerance to COVID. So why wouldn't they inject children at babies? Why wouldn't they? I mean, that's the question, is that we expect China to be guilty of all of these atrocities. They don't seem to have any boundaries at all. But we know that this mRNA jab, any of these experimental injections, they're not suitable for anybody. No. Whether they're, you know, whether they're not even born, whether they're in their mother's womb, whether they've just been born, whether they're a child, whether they're a teenager, whether they're an adult, or whether they're elderly or vulnerable. It doesn't matter. These injections should be stopped. The fact that they're giving babies this injection is nothing short of, well, it's evil. You know, it's an assault on creation. It's not just an assault on humanity. This is an assault on creation. What else can I say, Jesse? What else can I say?
Yes, it is an absolute unequivocal assault on creation. And I suppose in one sense, we shouldn't be surprised that this is happening. And I don't think I'm surprised, speaking for myself, but no. I am angry. I am all sorts of negative emotions boil up in me reading this sort of news. And these people, like this official who's making statements like 15% of this demographic of infants and children being injected with these toxic serums is not enough.
They're not at risk.
This is psychopath speak. Right.
These babies are not at risk. Children are not at risk. And yet, you know, alongside with what you've just said about the injections, I found out a couple of weeks ago and I didn't know, but remdesivir is also licensed for neonates, which is newborn babies just out of the womb. You know, why would we be giving something like remdesivir to newborn babies? This is an assault on creation. It's beyond wicked. It's satanic. It's demonic. I mean, it leaves you breathless. Yes.
It's child sacrifice, and it's not an exaggeration by any measure to call it that. That is what it is. And I cannot suspend my disbelief to think that this man, this official in China, does not know all of what we're talking about. I suppose it's possible, yes. And so then it comes back to the question, why is this being done? And we're talking about control, and control in the form of population reduction, social engineering, genetic engineering, a gamut of forms of social control that go from the primitive to the microscopically biological. And it's sick. All of it is sick. And as you said, completely unnecessary. I'm of the mind now, after doing much research, that not only does SARS-CoV-2 not exist as a virus, because it's never been isolated as such, and therefore COVID-19 doesn't exist as a viral disease, a disease caused by a virus, but I'm of the mind too that because no virus, alleged virus in history, has ever been purely isolated, that viruses have never been proven to exist as vectors of pathogens. That's just the scientific truth. Mm. Now, that doesn't mean they definitely don't exist. It's just they haven't been proven to exist in any pure form. So that's my position. I understand there are many views on that, and I respect that. And I'm not trying to push anyone either way. But whether you take my stance or you take the stance of this virus and the disease it causes existing, it is not a threat to most of the world's population. In fact, in the US, if not the entire world, the average age of death from COVID-19 is higher than the average age of a normal lifespan. So that speaks volumes in and of itself. So again,
I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I completely agree with you. And, you know, personally for me, I'm a terrain theory girl. And, you know, if you've got a bowl of fish, you know, you've got a goldfish or tropical fish or whatever, and the water gets dirty, do you add a load of chemicals to clean that water, which may also kill your fish? Or do you just change the water, you know, just change it to clean water? The majority of us would probably just change it to clean water, which means that we're erring on the side of terrain. For me, this injection virus means poison. It means venom. So that's the literal interpretation of the word virus. For me, this is a bioweapon. You know, there you go. Yes. I've said it now. I've come out and said it now. It's, in my opinion, this is nothing short of a bioweapon. And anybody that's had this injection, I guess you could technically say, you know, with what we know about shedding and the damage that it can do to people that haven't been vaccinated, you know, at the time of vaccination, I think it's between 1 day and 18 weeks where it's the strongest, if you like, the most, the highest possibility of shedding. You know, are we saying that people have been injected with a bioweapon? Is that what we're thinking? Because that's certainly where I am now.
Yes, I am too. And I've been of that mind for quite some time. And if you think in terms of SARS-CoV-2 being created in a lab and pair that up with the non-existence or the yet to be proven existence of viruses, what they created with SARS-CoV-2 wasn't a virus, but some sort of toxic contagious substance that one can only classify as a bioweapon that causes the disease known as COVID-19. And so given that SARS-CoV-2 itself, whatever it is, was never purely isolated, and the genomic sequence used to produce the injections was mostly created in silico on a computer, you're talking about a model derived from the genetic sequence of the bioweapon to make a so-called antidote to the bioweapon, which really just means that you're making another bioweapon. That's what it comes down to, if you look at it logically and trace the chronology of development based on this being a lab-created entity, SARS-CoV-2. So in short, any way you look at it, any way you hold it up to the light, the injections are bioweapons. And you could just look at what they've been doing to people, as we've been talking about, maiming and murdering people around the world for years now. That's what weapons do. And that they're not being curtailed, or they're barely being curtailed. A few countries have taken steps to curtail them, the use of them somewhat, but in large part, they're still being used, and new combinations, new cocktails are being invented. Purposeful harm is being done. They're being used as weapons, as bioweapons.
Yeah, and you know what's really ironic is that the WHO, World Health Organization, anybody that's not vaccinated, or anybody that's not fully, that they deem to be fully vaccinated, that's had three injections, that is, we are regarded as being within the top 10 global terrorist threats in the world. And yet, my interpretation of it is it's not us that are terrorists, it's them that are bioterrorists. Mm-hmm. You know, what we're witnessing, I believe, in my opinion, I mean, you know, I'm sorry if it ruffles anybody's feathers, but what I believe we're witnessing is bioterrorism being forced on us. We are being attacked biologically. Mm-hmm. And it's just quite shocking, because when you start to say words like bioterrorism and bioweapon and chemical weapon, you know, it seems absolutely abhorrent, and it could never possibly happen in our country, but clearly it is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it happened in the wake of the 9/11 attacks here in the U.S. with the anthrax attacks, which were traced back to Fort Detrick, which is a BSL-4 lab that, let's not beat around the bush, exists to experiment on and produce bioweapons. Now, people could say it's dual use, but dual use is essentially a euphemism for single use creation of bioweapons. So that's been done before. The so-called anthrax vaccine, which is a bioweapon, has been used on American soldiers who were basically forced to be test subjects for this anthrax vaccine. And that's where a lot of what's known as Gulf War syndrome has come from, from the effects of these toxic anthrax vaccines. So there's a lot of empirical evidence to back up what we're saying about these injections being bioweapons, a lot of historical empirical evidence as well. Moving slightly from that, I want to point out as we wrap up a piece that was published by the outlet fiercepharma.com, which I recommend for anybody who wants to get into, wants to look at the production and constant developments of the injections in particular, and in a way that is, it doesn't pull any punches. It's an industry outlet, so it really provides a lot of information and doesn't hide a lot of damning information the way that most corporate media does. But this piece was published on September 19th and is titled, BioNTech's COVID vaccine sales are poised to slip, but the shot will remain a, quote, cash cow, unquote, in the long term, analysts. So it's a bit of a lengthy piece in which I've highlighted quite a bit, but I want to go right to the last paragraph because it speaks a lot about, sorry, it's not the last paragraph. Let me find it here. I apologize.
Well, I mean, BioNTech, you know, I mean, this is a tiny little company. People don't realize it's a tiny little company, but they're the ones with the chemical kitchens. They're the ones that are cooking up these lotions and potions, and then they're farming them off to Pfizer, and Pfizer then outsource them to loads of other people. So BioNTech, mRNA, I'm imagining, Jesse, you're going to tell us, is going to be the way forward.
Well, I found it. It's actually in the fourth to last paragraph, and it reads, the ODDO team, which is sort of an analyst team that looks at these substances and predicts how they're going to perform financially. The ODDO team expects BioNTech's cash position to skyrocket from 1.7 billion euros at the end of 2021 to 19 billion euros by the end of 2022. Come 2024, BioNTech could pocket revenues of 26.9 billion euros, the analysts added, noting they expect Comirnaty, quote, should remain a cash cow, unquote. At the same time, and I'm adding this, they're expecting a decrease in the yields of Comirnaty. But then this paragraph goes on to say why this is not necessarily a bad thing, because COVID aside, the ODDO team notes BioNTech's pipeline in oncology is, quote, building up, unquote. So here we have BioNTech getting ready for the cancer damage that is being caused by its current injections.
And of course, cancer was their original. That was their area of, in inverted commas, expertise. That's where they started out. It was just that they heard through the grapevine, so they say, because they're a husband and wife team. I can't pronounce their names, but they heard in the middle of the night, we need some help with a vaccine for COVID. And they jumped in on the COVID bandwagon, but originally they were oncology and looking for the mRNA for cancer. So here we go. You can see them rubbing their hands in glee, considering one in two people apparently are going to suffer cancer. I can just see that they're all being genomic tested, and you know, they're going to say to people, you have a predisposition to cancer, so let's give you a vaccine to stop you from getting that cancer, whatever it be, the genetic predisposition. I've got all my words tangled up there, the predisposition of cancer. So that's why they're doing genomic testing. Of course, Bill Gates is involved in that with the Grail project, with Jeff Bezos testing people at early stages for cancer. Just ready for BioNTech to pounce on in.
Yes. Yes. And Moderna is doing the same thing. Anybody could freely go to their website and take a look at their pipeline. They have all types of mRNA platform-based cancer injections in the works. And these injections are projected to be rolled out to us for years to come. So this is not going away. Everything we've talked about today is not going away, and it's only going to get worse. Debbie, I always appreciate your time and your insights. As grim as our conversations can be, I think it's important that we talk about these things. So thank you very much once again.
Jesse, it's a two-way street. I learn heaps from you as well. So thank you very much again for the invitation, and look forward to speaking soon. God bless everyone.